If I told you there was a documentary about a couple of guys playing video games, you might be interested. If I told you it was about a couple of guys playing Donkey Kong, you might be interested. If I told you it was one of the most enjoyable documentaries I've ever seen, and somehow director Seth Gordon had managed to find a hero and a villain in the world of Donkey Kong, and I don't mean just inside the game, you might be even more interested. Well, I'm here to tell you that that's the case with a new movie that's opening today here in St. Louis at the Tivoli, down in the Del Mar Loop. It's called The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. And before we bring Seth Gordon on here, we have an appropriate introduction for him. That's the noise you would have heard when you played Donkey Kong, all those quarters sliding in those machines at the height of the video game craze in the 80s, and people are still playing it today. Hi, Seth. Welcome to KMOX.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
I really enjoyed the movie. What's the last time you played a game of Donkey Kong? Because for me, it's probably been 15, 20 years.
Well, I hadn't touched it since the early 80s myself. And then we actually ended up buying one as we realized what our film was becoming about, this rivalry between Billy and Steve. We bought our own for the editing suite so that we could understand the game as well as we needed to in order to make the movie. But it is a really hard game. I don't know if you remember from the 80s. It is so tough, and these guys, most people can only play the game for about a minute, and these guys can play for 3 hours.
I remember if I ever got to the second screen, I felt like I was having the greatest game of my life, and then it doubled in intensity, and I never got past that.
Yeah, I know. It is so hard, and it eats up the quarters pretty quickly. It always has.
Yes, it does. The Billy and Steve that Seth is referring to are Billy Mitchell, a guy who was once named the Gamer of the Century in 1999, and another guy named Steve Wiebe, who's just a regular, ordinary family guy who heard about Billy Mitchell being called the Gamer of the Century and holding the Donkey Kong record, and Steve just set out to break that record, huh?
Yeah, Steve was out of work. He was an engineer at Boeing, and he got fired, and he didn't know what to do with his time. So off of eBay, he bought himself a Donkey Kong machine. And he realized when he did a search online that he was able to break the record that had stood for 20 years that was held by Billy Mitchell. No one was able to touch Billy's score, and Steve really had nothing better to do, so he just kept playing Donkey Kong in his garage, and finally he got a record score. And what unfolded after there was obviously beyond anything we could have imagined.
Now, as I mentioned, you turned this into a really fun, good guy, bad guy. There's a lot of conflict in this movie. It's really, really well done. But I couldn't help but think, as I was watching the movie, thinking about you as the movie maker. First of all, whenever you're making a documentary, you hope to luck into characters like you found. But take me back even further than that. How did you say to yourself, I'm making a movie about Donkey Kong?
Well, I had been going to this arcade in New Hampshire that's been part of the film called Fun Spot since I was a kid. And it's basically my favorite place in the world. And I was aware of the gamers that play the games at the highest levels. But I had been out of touch with that world for a little while. And the producer of the film, Ed Cunningham, met through a mutual friend, Steve Wiebe. And when we met Wiebe and we heard that he had challenged Billy's record, We weren't sure that this is a guy who was worthy of a movie in the sense that he's just a nice guy, you know, average next door neighbor or something. And then we looked into his rival and we found out more and more about Billy Mitchell, who's an extraordinary person. Had held the records in all the major titles, Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man, Centipede, Dig Dug, Donkey Kong Jr. back in the day. And all of those have been challenged through the years, but no one could touch Donkey Kong. And the deeper we looked into this story, the more intense it became. And we met Billy Mitchell, and we went to his place in Florida, and one remarkable thing happened there. One, he's a historian on all the titles, and he had all these very interesting things to say about the records, but he would not say Steve Wiebe's name. And we thought that was really interesting, even though he knew the history of everything. When it had to do with classic arcade games, he was intentionally eliminating Steve Wiebe, his rival, and we thought that was fascinating. And so that became one of the reasons we started honing in on Donkey Kong. We had our initial notion for the movie was that it could be a documentary about a sport, but the sport in this case would be a classic arcade title. We had no idea what would unfold would be as gripping as it was.
Is Billy's ego really wrapped up in his identity as the gamer of the century and the greatest Donkey Kong player ever to this day?
It's hard to say. I mean, from as we dealt with Billy, he seemed to us sort of like a world wrestler or WWF guy in the sense that he had a persona, that almost like a character he would play in life. And as you, I mean, it's hard to describe without seeing the image of him, but he's got sort of like a, he's got really long hair that's perfectly coiffed, a dark button-down shirt, an American-themed tie, tight black jeans. He's got an outfit that he wears literally like a character in a wrestling match. And there's no doubt about it that his ego is extreme. And I think in a lot of ways gives importance to all of these classic gamers that revere him.
And they really do. And there's a whole clique, I guess you'd call it, of guys who kind of hang around him, and he is their god, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Billy is the center of the universe when it comes to classic arcade gaming because he set all the records in the early days because he was sort of the Jedi that was the best at all the games. And because he's such a showman that he has brought, especially in the early 80s when all of this sort of clique got formed, he brought notoriety and fame to all of them because he was so good at mastering PR. And he sort of kept that up ever since. He's like sort of frozen in time in the sense that everything is in, it comes back to the video games.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with Seth Gordon, director of the terrific new documentary, The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters, which opens up today here in St. Louis. It's about two guys, Billy Mitchell and Steve Wiebe, battling it out to take the title of the best Donkey Kong player ever, which essentially means getting the highest score ever. Anybody who's ever played any of those classic arcade games, you know when you walk up to the machine, there are the high scores there. Imagine that these guys have scores so high that you couldn't possibly imagine anybody ever getting that number.
Well, they also discovered something that even the designers of the game didn't know existed, called a kill screen. In the old games, they're all on this old chip called the Z80 processor, and that eventually runs out of memory, and it affects each of the titles you know in a different way. Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man, they all have a kill screen, and when you get to the unintentional end of the game, it runs out of memory, and it crashes and dies. And Billy and Steve are the only two guys in the world that can that are known to have gotten there, and certainly known to have done it in a way that was witnessed by somebody else.
Speaking of the designers of these games, have you heard from any of them, or have Billy and Steve ever talked to any of these guys, since they are the ones who essentially have broken through to the dark side of these games?
Yeah, like passed through the event horizon. Billy and Steve both have had some communication with Nintendo. Billy, back in the day, in the early 80s, he was known at Nintendo as the level 2-2 guy. They flew him to Japan, and when he was 17 or 18 years old, he showed them what the end of the game was like, because Nintendo didn't know.
What does level 2-2 mean?
Oh, there's the kill screen comes at the 117th board on the 22nd level of Donkey Kong. So Billy's the only guy that could get there back in the early 80s, and so he became known by Nintendo as the level 2-2 guy.
Okay, and what was their reaction to him?
I think awe, and I would say a bit, they were a bit stupefied that someone would spend the time to master it. No one expected that anyone would invest so much time in playing their game.
Now, Seth, you know that there are a lot of people listening to us right now, and even people who walk out of your movie who are going to think to themselves, what a waste of life these guys have had. All they've done is played these video games, putting quarters in the slot and trying to get to the kill screen for all these years. What kind of life is that?
Well, I think, and that's a perfectly reasonable question to be asking. I mean, some have asked, why don't these guys work for NASA? Because the level of the thought and intelligence that it takes to get where these guys can get in this game certainly could be put to better use elsewhere, arguably. But I think that's part of what fascinated me about the topic and about the film, that I think it's a uniquely American attribute to try to make history and to try to associate yourself with something eternal and to master something, however small, so that you can go down in the record books. And to me, that's part of what makes this thing fascinating, and their obsession with the opportunity to be remembered forever as the best at something is what drove these guys to be essentially the Salieri and Mozart of Donkey Kong and hate each other's guts.
Also, this is more than just a guy taking that little paddle with the pink ball and the string and bouncing it up and down and setting that kind of record or the pogo stick record. In their cases, and particularly in Steve Wiebe's case, you show him in the movie using some of his engineering skills to watch the game and figure it out, and he actually maps out what he's supposed to do with the joystick to make Mario go this way and jump over there and grab that hammer and avoid that fireball. So he's actually using some of his brain power to figure out the game, not just play the game.
Right. It's a mixture of talent and skill that these guys apply over many years in order to get very good at this. The question certainly could come up, why would you bother doing that? But there's no doubt that it is something that nobody else can do. These two guys literally are the only ones that can do what they do, and as a result, I think, make a marvelous study and because their personalities are so different.
Now, speaking of personalities, there's another one that you highlight in this movie, a guy by the name of Walter Day. Tell my audience who he is.
Walter Day is a transcendental meditator and had founded Twin Galaxies, which was the video game scoreboard back in the early 80s, because he wanted to give people the opportunity to attain glory. And it is his arcade and its associated scoreboard that became the official world record keepers for all classic arcade scores.
He's kind of a self-proclaimed referee and scorekeeper and record keeper for all of these games, right?
That's right. And went about the business of essentially accrediting himself and the guys around him as the experts on all these titles. And because there was nobody else doing it at the time, he became the center of this world. And most recently, and what happened during our film, one of the sort of extraordinary moments of serendipity was that the Guinness Book of Records got interested in Twin Galaxies and it started allowing their scores to be in the current books. And that's what took the stakes through the roof, because now Twin Galaxies and all of its scores would be commemorated in the book that everyone knows.
I know the movie has debuted in other cities earlier this year and is finally getting to St. Louis today, The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. Since the movie has actually been released, is the rivalry between Billy and Steve still going on as intensely as it was while you were making the movie?
I would say even more intensely. The saga continues, and for an update on that, I mean, we have everything that's happened that we captured during the film. But I encourage anyone who sees the film to go online. Don't spoil it before you go see the movie, but to catch up on what's happened since, because it's equally interesting and will be part of our DVD.
Yep. I was just going to ask you. You can already be plotting the special features on the DVD, because these guys aren't going to stop anytime soon.
Well, absolutely. And the documentary, what evolved in front of our eyes was very much like a traditional three-act structure in a narrative feature film.
Yeah.
New Line has purchased the rights, and we're going to be remaking the documentary as a narrative feature with actors. And that's going to be a ton of fun, and I think that'll give us an opportunity to update some of what's happened since the film, which is just as fascinating as what happened to us during.
Who are you going to cast as the guys? Do you know yet?
Don't know yet. It's all about how the script comes in, because that's really the piece of material that can get actors interested.
I'll tell you, I think it works so well as a documentary. I'm going to tell everybody I know to go see this. It opens today in St. Louis. It'll be playing at the Tivoli down in the Del Mar Loop. It's called The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. It not only was a throwback to my video game playing days of the early 80s myself, but also just enjoyable as one heck of a rivalry movie. Congratulations, Seth.
Thank you so much.
Seth Gordon, the director of The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters, here on The Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.